The last case on today's call is number 06-2982, Jewett against Anders. Ms. Lappin.
Good afternoon. Milwaukee Police Officer Dale Anders respectfully asserts that he is entitled to qualified immunity for his decision to stop Terrence Jewett on December 21, 2003, for the purpose of confirming whether or not he was a man that was wanted in an attempted homicide that had taken place in Milwaukee the day before. The record will reflect that on that particular date, on December 21st, Officer Anders was part of an investigatory team which was set out to look for the wanted person. The person who had been identified as the shooter in the attempted homicide was one Andre Thompson. In the information that was given to the officers, Mr. Thompson was believed to have worked in the automotive department of the Walmart store that was located at approximately 60th and Center Street in the city of Milwaukee, 60th and Capitol. The officers proceeded to that location. Officer Anders and his partner were in full uniform, marked police squad car. They proceeded to the rear of the Walmart building to where the automotive department was located. They parked their vehicle so as to face the automotive department and keep their eyes on the doors. It is undisputed while the officers were in that location, they observed a person stick his head out the door, the side door, and pop that head back in.
What door was that? Where did that door lead?
It was a side door that went outside into the parking lot from the automotive department.
From the automotive department.
Correct. Facing, and it was on the corner, or excuse me, on the wall that faced the north parking lot.
Was the squad car visible from that door?
Yes, it was.
About how far away was the squad car?
At the initial point in time when the head was observed popping out, I believe Officer Anders was located approximately 80 to 100 yards away from that point in time.
Yards?
Correct. Correct. They pulled themselves across the parking lot from the automotive department to give themselves as wide an angle as possible to observe the side doors that went out to the north, as well as the large doors that went to the west of the department.
The head popped out. The officers did what?
At that point in time, the officers observed the person's head popping out or coming out, looking out the door, going back into the automotive department. Shortly after that, they observed an individual who Officer Anders believed fit the description of the wanted person of Andre Thompson. Officer Anders at that point in time put his squad car into gear, began to drive towards this location. As he was driving towards the location of this subject, he observed the subject turn and run at full speed back toward the door out of which he had just come moments before. This heightened Officer Anders' awareness or his interest in this particular person. At that point in time, he stopped his vehicle, he exited the vehicle, he engaged in issuing orders to this individual to stop, halt. The officer believed that the person could clearly recognize that he was a police officer. He was in full uniform. He had just emerged from a marked squad car. The officer initiated contact with this individual and ultimately took him into custody. At that point in time, the officer brought the individual to his squad car, obtained identification from the individual. The identification that was produced indicated that this person was Terrence Jewett and not Andre Thompson. Per protocol, the officer ran the identification to make sure this person that he had in his custody was not a wanted person. The wanted check came back clean. At that point, he made a determination that he would release Mr. Jewett from the scene after detaining him briefly in the squad car. He issued him a citation for resisting or obstructing an officer. He did so because he believed that it was clearly visible to Mr. Jewett that he was an officer, that he was in uniform, operating a marked squad, and that when the officer issued his commands to stop or to halt police, that Mr. Jewett should have obeyed those commands and stopped and not run from the officer in what appeared to the officer to be an attempt to escape.
Be under an obligation to stop?
I believe at this juncture there was an obligation to stop and heed the officer's orders.
Why?
Certainly from the
Why?
Officers, from the, he's an officer in uniform. He's just emerged from a marked squad car. This is not a stranger or an unknown person. It's a police officer. But from the officers.
That's an impeding an officer?
I'm sorry?
That would be constituted in Milwaukee, impeding an officer?
Yes, it would obstruct. It was obstructing the officer from fulfilling his duties with regard to further investigating this matter, to make contact with this subject, to determine whether or not this subject was the wanted person that was known to work at this location and fit this general description.
Whatever happened to that charge?
With that particular charge, it was issued as a municipal citation, which is a forfeiture in the city of Milwaukee. It was reviewed by the prosecution division of our office, which is located in our police or near our police administration building. And at that point in time, the citation was determined to not be prosecutable.
Thank you.
Certainly. And with regard to the ultimate dispensation or disposition of that citation, it's not uncommon for citations to be dismissed or for the person to essentially be given a holdup or that type of remedy, given their record, given the totality of the circumstances. But in this particular case, again, it's Officer Anders' position that he was entitled to qualified immunity, that he should not have to proceed to trial relative to that claim against him, because given the totality of the circumstances, and the information presented to him that evening, given his training and experience, that it was reasonable for him to make contact with the suspect or subject, to confirm the subject's identity, to determine whether or not he was the person who was wanted in the homicide or the attempted homicide.
So in effect, it was a Terry stop, in your
view. In effect, it was a Terry stop, correct.
And he gave the citation.
Correct.
And what does that transform that Terry stop into something else?
I believe it's still an arrest because it's a stop. It's a seizure of the person. The person is not allowed to leave the scene.
Is it an arrest or a Terry stop?
I believe it's closer to a Terry stop. It's not a custodial arrest because he was released from the scene, but he was detained. And if you look at an arrest as being simply limiting this person's ability to freely leave the area, in other words, the officer is maintaining control.
That citation, is that a criminal offense or is it a civil forfeiture?
It's a civil forfeiture.
Yeah.
Correct. And so, again, as soon as the officer determined that he was who he appeared to be, given his information, given his identification, he was released from the scene. And it took approximately 20 minutes. I realize plaintiff argues it was maybe 30 or 40. But even the 30 or 40 minutes, he's seated in the backseat of a warm squad car. It's a December night. The officer is doing nothing other than running the checks, making sure there aren't any warrants, confirming this person's identity, and then he's free to leave the scene after he's given his municipal citation.
Was the officer by himself, or was he in the company of another officer?
He was with a partner, Officer Pavolo. And while they were on scene, but Mr. Jewett had been placed in the squad car by this point in time, a sergeant even had responded and had spoken with Mr. Jewett, but she was not present during the initial contact and taking him into custody. So again, it is Officer Anders' position that he was entitled to qualified immunity relative to his stop and his arrest of Mr. Jewett on the evening in question. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll hear now from Ms. Lewis.
Thank you. One of the points I make in my brief, and I won't belabor it here, is that there are material issues of fact which are in dispute in this case as to what happened, how it happened, when it happened. And so from that perspective, where you're dealing with summary judgment on a case, then you should not grant summary judgment where there are material issues of fact. As the defense has stated the question as to whether or not a constitutional violation occurred, she's stated the facts in the light most favorable to the defense, but not in a way that would be in the light most favorable to the plaintiff. And so if you look at the end of my brief, you will see where I have made the distinction between the way in which she's stated the facts, the defense has stated the facts and the way that Jewett articulates the facts. In other words, they say that Jewett matched the description of the person wanted with reference to a homicide investigation and that he ran away from uniformed officers who were operating a marked police car. We say he didn't match the description of the person wanted. Anders knew or should have known that, and that he ran towards a door trying to catch it before it was closed. Let me tell you about the Walmart area that they're talking about. It's a U-shaped area. So you'll see in the affidavit of Officer Anders that he didn't run all that hard towards Mr. Jewett because he saw that he had no place to go. That's because he's running back towards a corner. So there's no place for Mr. Jewett to go. And then Officer Anders proceeds to slam him up against the wall and tap. That does not sound like somebody who was just stopped to ask for identification. The issue in terms of whether or not Jewett matched the description of the person wanted is disputed because none of the police records indicate a description that would look anything like Mr. Jewett. The police records say, alternatively, that Andre Thompson was 5'6", 5'10", 170 pounds, 150 pounds, something like that. They uniformly say that he had braids in his hair, and none of those descriptions fit Mr. Jewett. He's over 6 foot. He's over 200 pounds. His hair is short. He's clean shaven. And then you get to this issue of whether or not Mr. Anders could see Mr. Jewett from 100 yards away at night. I mean, I hope that someone, I mean, we were saying earlier that judges know a few things. I hope that one of you has either been on a football team or else has been in a marching band on a football field, because 100 yards is a long way, especially at night in a dimly lit parking lot. There isn't any way that they could see that this was a Mr. Jewett and not, excuse me, Mr. Thompson and not Mr. Jewett. The only similarities, as I mentioned earlier and in my brief, between Mr. Jewett and Mr. Thompson is that they were both black and they both worked at Walmart. That's the only similarity. And again, going back to that theme that judges know a few things, so do juries in Milwaukee. And one of the things that we know in Milwaukee is that there are problems. There are serious problems if you're African American in the city of Milwaukee. We've recently had a lot of press about how the police have beaten and battered African Americans. We've recently had a lot of press about how those same police will lie, not only in internal investigations, but on the stand and to cover each other. We've had a lot of press about how Milwaukee is the most segregated city in the United States. We've had a lot of press about how education for African Americans in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, is worse than you would find for African Americans in any state south of the Mason-Dixon line. And recently, a study was done to evaluate discrimination in employment in the context of a criminal conviction record or race. And what they found in Milwaukee was that criminal conviction might prevent your employability.
Is all this part of the record?
No, you're not, Your Honor. It's not. What I'm talking about is the kinds of things that a judge knows.
I'm perfectly willing to be sociologically involved with you, but I want to know what it has to do with what we're talking about.
What it has to do with what we're talking about is that the judge denied the motion for summary judgment on the issue of qualified immunity in this case.
Yes, that's what we're talking about.
Right. And I believe that part of the reason that the judge denied the motion for qualified immunity is that the judge understands the context.
Did the judge enunciate that?
No, he did not.
Well, then why don't you not do it?
One of the things that is necessary in order to understand the issues in this case is the issue of the material disputes of fact. Now, the judge did not examine the material issues of fact in his decision. He based his decision on whether or not the officers relied on hearsay. Whether this court makes a determination that an officer can rely upon hearsay for a description of the suspect is, I think, fairly debatable in terms of the way in which the
You're claiming, as you said earlier, there's a disputed issues of material fact, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
And we don't have jurisdiction if you're correct.
Apparently, that is something that when we examined the jurisdiction issues in this case earlier, my understanding was that where there is an issue of qualified immunity and that issue has been appealed, that this court does have jurisdiction. And so, you know, if I was wrong, I am more than happy to stand corrected.
We've been talking about it all morning.
Well, it's been a very educational morning for me, Your Honor. The issues of material fact are absolutely one of the things that I rely on the primary issue that I rely upon in this case. We do not believe that there is not, or excuse me, we believe that there is a material issue of fact as to whether Mr. Jewett fit the description of the person wanted for the attempted homicide, because for the dispatcher to have made a description that met the description of Mr. Jewett, the dispatcher would have had to make that description up out of whole cloth. There was absolutely no police record. There was absolutely no evidence to substantiate that the police had any information that the suspect in this case looked anything like Mr. Jewett. And furthermore, it is impossible for anyone to tell that someone like Mr. Jewett looked like Mr. Thompson from 100 yards away at dark in an ill-lit parking lot. There's a dispute of fact as to whether the parking lot was ill-lit or not, but I think that in terms of the way that we would analyze this case, certainly what we're going to be looking at is the issue of whether or not the officer could have seen 100 yards at dark and seen anything but that both of these individuals, Mr. Thompson and Mr. Jewett, were black and they happened to be at Walmart. That's the only similarity between the two of them. The in terms of, you know, whether or not Officer Anderson was wearing a police uniform and operating a marked police squad car, even Officer Anders acknowledges that by the time that he approached Mr. Jewett, Mr. Jewett's back was turned. He was 100 yards away in a squad at night, and Mr. Jewett turns around and starts running away, and that's what makes him suspicious. So as he's going towards Mr. Jewett, Mr. Jewett's back is turned. What we know, Mr. Jewett maintains that he did not know that this was a police officer, and that all he heard was stop in a neighborhood that isn't very safe, and he was afraid that he was about to be mugged. So, with that, and those material disputes of fact, the issue before the court will be whether or not there ought to be qualified immunity at the summary judgment stage where there are material issues of fact. The court in this case did not examine that issue. And so it will be, I believe, for this court to examine that issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis. How much time does counsel have? Thank you.
It's Officer Anders' position that there are not significant material issues of fact which preclude summary judgment, specifically qualified immunity, on the issue of the lawfulness of the arrest. It has not been disputed that on December 20th of 2003, there was an attempted homicide involving a weapon, a gun. It's not disputed that Andre Thompson was determined to be a suspect in that shooting. It's not disputed that on the date in question, the officers were informed that Mr. Thompson worked or is believed to have worked in the automotive department at the Walmart store. Didn't just happen to be there. He was an employee there and in the automotive department. It's not in dispute that the officers were present with their uniforms on in a marked squad car. It's not in dispute that a male stuck his head out of the door of the automotive department and the head popped back in, raising the officer's suspicions. It's not disputed that a person generally fitting the description that the officer had. And Officer Anders indicated in his affidavit that the information he had was Mr. Thompson was born in 1981, so believed to be about 22 years of age. He was a black male. He was approximately 6 feet 3 inches tall, about 216 pounds. From his position, he believed that the person he saw emerge from that door generally fit the height and weight and other descriptors of Andre Thompson. As the officer approached, it's not disputed that this individual went running back to this store. Now, Mr. Jewett now claims it's because I forgot my keys and I was trying to get back in the building before the door closed. The officer didn't know that. The officer saw someone running back to this store after the officer put his squad car in motion in the direction of this individual. All of these items, all of these factors within the officer's knowledge are undisputed. Relative to this purported dispute of description, I believe it's undisputed that the officer had the information regarding believing the person to be, meaning Andre Thompson, to be 22 years of age, a male, African-American, certain height, certain weight. Even if one would assume that Officer Anders, when he's out there in his squad car that night, knew about all the reports that were generated by all the detectives and police personnel who were investigating the shooting, and that he was aware of the different descriptions given of Mr. Thompson by the people who witnessed this shooting, even if we assume that there's some kind of collective knowledge on the police department at that stage in the investigation, it's undisputed that the person wanted was an African-American male, aged in his 20s, over 5 feet 6 inches tall, thus fitting the general descriptors that Officer Anders had available to him that night of the person that they were looking for at the automotive department of the Walmart store. And so it's our position that there is no dispute as to any material fact here, that all of the information that Officer Anders had that night, coupled with his observations of the suspicious-looking person popping the head out, running back to the door, running away from him when he's ordering to stop, taken all together, gave him the lawful authority to stop that person to further his investigation. And so we think he is or was entitled to qualified immunity. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Our thanks to both Ms. Lappin and Ms. Lewison for their fine presentations today. The case will be taken under advisement.